Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com coming up on this Wednesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. If you fly a lot and you miss those in-flight meals, they're coming back, at least on some flights. So that's good news in some ways. What are some of the best foods to help you build muscle? A really interesting story about a surfer became the first person to cross the Atlantic Ocean on a paddleboard. That's not easy to do. He raised some money for a good cause also. And another story we'll look at, are teenagers replacing drugs with smartphones? That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, this Wednesday edition, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn app, too. Lots of other places as well. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. And when Grant came in, he paid me a compliment. You said you liked my outfit today. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Looks like you're dressed up. Nice suit.
Fancy. I feel fancy today. And you don't get a lot of radio hosts wearing full suits.
Yeah, because no one could see us.
Right.
They would have no idea what's going on.
It's pretty rare. You know, a lot of times, I don't know how often it happens. I've seen it happen personally, but where people that are on TV, they'll have they're doing the news, they'll have a tie and suit on. And then, but under the desk, they'll have shorts.
Right.
Like, I have seen that. And I don't know. They probably don't do that up at some of the bigger, national networks, but they do it sometimes. And, of course, nowadays there's so many different camera angles, and they show you the person walking, so they couldn't do it the same. But we're not doing that. I actually have the matching pants today.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing neither of us is buried up here in the studio at all times. I mean, you're about to leave after this, so if we were always up here, then maybe some things would be different.
Holds me true to the dress code standard. Of course, NCAA tournament's coming up, where I think a lot of us are looking forward to that. Many are predicting Duke to win the championship. What are your thoughts, Grant? Who's going to win the NCAAs?
Well, don't take my thoughts too seriously because I don't know much about college basketball. I just very rarely will watch maybe the championship game or a couple others in the entire tournament.
You can't say Thunder, by the way. They're not the tournament, no.
They would win, though.
They probably would.
Easily.
Yeah.
I'm just saying Villanova just because they won last year. Probably won't happen. I don't think they have some guys on that team that they even had last year. So it's probably a different team, but they're still a number one seed, I believe.
They are, yeah. So it'll be interesting. I don't follow it super closely. I know a couple of players that I like to watch and then a couple of teams. And beyond that, that's what makes it so interesting when you watch the first couple of rounds. And you're like, where's this school from? You know, and there's some small school playing. So that'll be pretty exciting. Actually, it kicked off on Tuesday night. I thought it was Wednesday, but it actually kicked off on Tuesday night with some schools playing. So an exciting time of year for that. A related basketball note, I think basketball fans will remember Darko Milicic.
Yes.
You remember him? Yeah, he was drafted in the same draft with LeBron James. That was a really good NBA draft. LeBron James went number one. Carmelo Anthony went number three. Chris Bosh went four. Dwayne Wade went five. And at number two... Oh. Darko Milicic. Which one does not fit in with the others, right?
That's just not fair. Yeah, I remember him having some pretty nice offensive skills, too. But whenever you get drafted that high and the four picks around you become basically NBA legends, then you're in a little bit of trouble there.
Yeah, and it was an interesting situation because Detroit Pistons drafted him. They had just won the championship the year before, but because of trades and so forth, they had a really good pick. And so they thought, boy, we're about to build a dynasty here. You know, who are we going to pick? They already had a championship team. Who do you pick? And they go with a guy that just didn't really fit in. There's an interesting write-up about him, and the title of the article is this: Miserable at every NBA stop, Darko Milicic has found peace as a farmer.
Wow.
So he has changed. He's doing something different now, obviously. His career has ended. He shuttled around between different teams. Always had a lot of potential, a lot of good size, 7 feet, pretty close. But it just never came together for him. And it's an interesting piece. I mean, he talks about coming over from Europe. He said he thought he was God's gift to basketball. And he came in with sort of an attitude where he was confrontational with even his teammates. And he didn't work as hard as he needed to. He got caught up in kind of the lifestyle and not working on getting better. And not, I guess he just didn't know how to be a professional. Because even though it's sports and it's a game, there is a way to go about it professionally. You have to take care of your body. You have to take care of your nutrition. You have to work hard at your skills because you can fall off really quick, even though you're gifted, you know, with all kinds of abilities. And so he said he just didn't take it seriously enough. And he was 18, 19 at the time. And he just, once he got into that mode, he never could really get out of it. And he was miserable. But now here he is all these years later. He's farming. He says, I've gained 90 pounds since I stopped playing. So he's at 350.
Wow.
That's a big man.
I thought he was already a bit pudgy while he was playing, and that gave away to me that he wasn't working as hard as he should.
Yeah.
But now he's huge.
350.
Yeah.
He says, I'm 350 right now. I'm working at my farm and enjoying that kind of production. I take walks through my fields and watch the process, which makes me really happy. He says, I'm still pretty inexperienced at this, so I like to learn, seek guidance, go to seminars. I've created my own peace of mind, and I'm enjoying it. There are always problems, like in any other field of work, but I'd rather do this than build skyscrapers in the city because I'd end up shooting myself.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that's pretty.
That's blunt.
Okay, we got you, Darko. He says, I think this is the most positive story of them all. Food production and food in general is the future in every sense. So it's funny where people end up. Mm-hmm. You know, huge NBA prospect, played professional basketball, and now he's a farmer. And you know how it is. The next generation comes along, and let's assume he stays at this farm, and he gets older and probably bigger. And, you know, the kids would be like, oh, do you know that guy used to play professional basketball? You know, they'll look at him, that guy, that big farmer down the road. But, you know, people move on with life. So, I mean, if he's happy, that's good, because he didn't have a very good run in the NBA.
Right. Obviously, he'll be far less famous now as a farmer, and yet, strangely, his job is far more essential to life than those basketball players who were rich and famous.
Somebody started a, I think it was like a Facebook page or Twitter account or something. Maybe it was a website. It was called Free Darko because they never let him play.
Right.
And they wanted to get him in the game and see what he could do. And so, he didn't have a good NBA run. And there's always some number one, two picks in the draft that don't pan out, either because they just couldn't handle the lifestyle, they get injured, variety of things, and they're always kind of known as that, like, oh, can you believe they picked him? That'd be hard to carry around. Greg Oden, right?
Yeah.
He went number one, Kevin Durant went number two. And yeah. Oden would have been great, except he got hurt.
Yeah, it's not really fair. He's labeled as a bust, like a total pathetic failure, and yet what could he really do about that when it's like your body's creaking and breaking every time you try to step on the court?
Yeah, he was a strange guy because he looked like he was a lot older than he was.
Yeah.
And I think when it came into the draft, they, you know, do all the measurements and stuff, and they found that one leg was a little shorter than the other. That's going to cause you problems.
Yeah.
Obviously, your movements and things. And so, yeah, it's just unfortunate that happens sometimes, but then you always have to live with that, like failure, bust, you know. And in some cases, maybe that's true, but other times you just have things happen. So
the reality is, though, 99% of NBA or any basketball player would love to be labeled an NBA bust because it means they at least made it that far.
Yeah, and we're drafted high enough to be
considered
a bust. So that is pretty. That'd be interesting to put together a list of like your all bust team.
Mm-hmm.
Like who would be the best or the worst all bust team? You know,
I should come back with the list tomorrow and see what we think about that.
I can think of a few off the top of my head just because of where they were drafted in relation to a legend. Mm-hmm. You know, Darko after LeBron. You know, Oden before Durant.
Who was picked?
Bowie.
Yeah, before Michael Jordan. Sam Bowie.
Yeah. And so the scouts, NBA scouts always love the big guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they want the big guy. And if you get a good big guy, he can really help you out. But they don't always work. We've had some stories over the last few years or months, I guess, about different electronic devices exploding. And we all have electronic devices, so it's something I guess we think about sometimes. This happened recently. It says headphone batteries explode on flight to Australia. A woman whose headphones caught fire on a plane suffered burns to her face and hands. Australian officials said Wednesday as they warned about the dangers of battery-operated devices in flight. The passenger was listening to music on her own battery-operated headphones as she dozed about 2 hours into the trip from Beijing to Melbourne on February the 19th. And then there was a loud explosion. She says, as I went to turn around, I felt burning on my face. That'd be scary because you hear an explosion, you'd think, you know, bomb. Or I mean, you're on an airplane or something went wrong mechanically. Are we going to crash? But in this case, it was on her face. The headphones blew up and it burned her pretty good.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, I recently got a Walkman myself, so I'm a little bit nervous about flying with that thing now.
It was one of those old ones, wasn't it?
It was. Just classic. It's not even working right now. It already stopped working after I used it once or twice.
You have to call the Walkman repair shop. I don't know that you can find too many of those. This case, the ladies, yeah, she got burned by her headphones. She says, I just grabbed my face, which caused the headphones to go around my neck, and I continued to feel burning, so I grabbed them off and threw them on the floor. They were sparking and had small amounts of fire. Crazy. Flight attendants rushed to help and poured a bucket of water on the headphones, but the battery and its cover had both melted and stuck to the floor. Pictures show the woman, who is not named, with a blackened face and neck and blisters on her hands. It's all over the internet. You can see that if you want to. She got burned pretty good. Fellow passengers had to endure the smell of melted plastic, which is not a pleasant odor.
No.
Burnt electronics and singed hair for the remainder of the flight. You can't really open a window, I guess.
You could,
but you shouldn't.
You'd fly away.
People were coughing and choking the entire way home, the woman added. The Transport Safety Bureau, which did not identify the airline or the brand of headphones involved in the incident, said the lithium-ion batteries in the device likely caught fire. So, a lot of headphones don't have batteries, but some do, you know, if they're noise-canceling headphones or I suppose a few others. And so here's another example of it just exploding. Pretty rare, but still, just the fact that it could happen would probably give a lot of people pause as to whether or not to use devices like this.
I doubt a book's going to explode, so maybe we could all just go back to reading.
The book, yeah, burst into flames. So a kind of interesting story there. I think that's the first time I've heard of headphones blowing up. But the cell phones has been the thing with the different batteries. So that was on a flight to Australia. And when you're on those long flights, you need something to keep your attention or help you relax or rest or something, because otherwise it's hard to just sit there for that long. But she didn't sleep well after being burned, obviously.
Yeah.
It didn't say anything about what she's going to do. You know, the first thing you kind of think about is maybe a lawsuit or something. I don't know that she could do that, but I don't know. It does seem like the company should compensate her in some way for her
injuries.
The
headphone company, right?
Yeah.
Not the airline.
Yeah. Right. I'm assuming they were her own. I don't think because sometimes the airlines will hand them out, but they're not like that extravagant usually. So that's an unfortunate thing that happened there on a flight to Australia. American Airlines, though, they are going to try to improve some of their flights, and they're going to launch free meals on coast-to-coast flights. The company said on Tuesday it's going to offer free in-flight meals to all flyers on trips between Los Angeles and New York and San Francisco beginning May the 1st. So if you're taking that coast-to-coast flight, you can get a free meal again. Back to the good old days.
That sounds amazing. Hopefully their rates don't tick up a little bit just to kind of make up for that.
The food doesn't look outstanding. The menu, they say, will differ depending on the time of day. Continental breakfast will be served in the mornings. Continental breakfast on American Airlines. Should it be on Continental? And lunch and dinner options include a boxed meal with a sandwich wrap, chips, and dessert. So better than nothing, but it's not like the good old days, the hot meals.
Yeah, what is that, like a 5 or 6 hour trip at least? Something like that?
Yeah.
That far?
Yeah, it would be.
Wow.
For sure. So that'll be it's interesting to see. The airlines have kind of gone to the extreme of, you know, how many people can we jam on these flights? And then, of course, obviously people don't like that. And now they're starting to come back. We talked the other day about how they might be expanding the amount of room you have. Now they're starting to offer meals on some flights again. So it seems like they're trying to come back to some sort of happy medium where flying is not an absolutely horrible experience.
Right.
Try to bring some customers back.
Yeah, exactly. And it has gotten to the point where flying has become such a hassle. You have to get there so early before you're you're even supposed to fly. And then if you're going anywhere close, it's almost like you could beat going there with your car. You could get there faster in your car by the time you have to get there early and wait for your bag to come out, go through security, things like that. And then, of course, you're crammed in there when you don't have to be crammed in your car necessarily. So it just seems like if you're going somewhere close by, people would normally at least choose their car then.
Yeah, John Madden didn't want to fly. He always took his bus. And it was a nice one.
That's a great idea, though, because is he only calling one game a week? So he basically has the whole week to travel. Mm-hmm. Most people probably don't have that luxury, but that's how you do it. That's how you should.
He could play Madden football the whole time in his vehicle. That's always the question when people fly into Dallas and they're coming back to Oklahoma City. You know, it's about a 3-hour drive, 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
And the flight's obviously very quick. But if you're landing in Dallas and you've got like a 5-hour layover or something, and it happens, you know, you do start thinking about, just rent a car. Just drive back.
Right.
But then I guess you have to kind of, you already paid for the ticket, and then you have to think, well, would it be better to spend my time driving or just sitting here doing something
else? At least I could read, exactly.
So it kind of depends. But sometimes that happens when there's severe storms, and, you know, if a flight's delayed overnight or something. I've known people that have done that and just said, I'm just going to drive back, because it's not a bad drive.
No.
Just to get on I-35, and there you go. No problem. So the airlines are trying to improve their service to some extent. And we'll see how that proceeds. Here's a pretty cool story about a surfer who became the first person to cross the Atlantic Ocean on a paddleboard. Paddleboards are not real big. It's like basically like a surfboard. And he crossed the entire Atlantic Ocean on that. I'm not real comfortable in giant bodies of water, like the middle of the ocean, by myself. I would be very uncomfortable. So you'd have to be very comfortable in the water. And you'd have to be, like, mentally able to handle being out there. I think somebody was kind of following him, you know, in case he had a problem. So it wasn't like, you know, he was lost at sea type of thing. It was set up. It was a plan. But still, pretty amazing. And he did it to try to raise money for a pretty good cause. His name is Chris Burdish. He's an ambitious South African surfer. That makes sense. South Africa. Your wife is South African.
Right.
She surf?
Well, she's very ambitious. I don't know if she surfed too much.
this guy is a big surfer here, Chris Burdish. He just became the first person in history to cross the Atlantic Ocean on a stand-up paddleboard. According to National Public Radio, Burdish powered through more than 4,050 nautical miles from Morocco to the English harbor and Antigua, and it took him 93 days. Wow. I hope he had a lot of sunscreen. You'd get burned to a crisp out there.
Yeah, and the first thing I thought about was, what if he got some sort of a cut and bled into the water? I mean, obviously there's someone following him, but sometimes it doesn't take long for predators to swarm around you whenever you've started bleeding.
All kinds of things could have happened. He could have gotten sick, you know. It does raise some interesting questions how exactly you would do that. But
did he ever get off the paddleboard and get on the boat that was following him or whatever?
It doesn't appear that he did. They had it, it explains here that... throughout his journey, Burdish faced strong winds, swells, equipment failure, and sharks, as you were wondering. He did it all with a 20-foot high-tech board that featured GPS, weather forecasting equipment, solar panels, and a small space for sleeping. So it was a nice board.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it is interesting, though, that he would sleep. He'd have to, of course. But that would be... I'd be afraid I'd roll off into the water or something. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be able to relax. You'd have to be very comfortable out there in the water. And but he was able to do that. Because you think about the energy it would take to do something like this. I don't know what the solar panels were for. Maybe to power the GPS, I guess.
Yeah, that's possible.
But other than that, I'm not sure.
For him to get a tan?
Yeah. It was a green energy board. So he completed the trip at 8:32 a.m. on Thursday, and was a couple weeks ago, and was appropriately excited about the accomplishment. He wrote, "It's an incredible day." He had a Facebook page where he chronicled his travels via so-called captain's logs. So I don't know how he did that. How would he update it?
I don't know.
Somebody was updating it. This is fishy. There's too many fishy things about it.
He had a lot of help, it seems.
Somebody was helping him out. He said, "In culmination of everything I've been working on and towards for half a decade now, it's a day that will change history, the world, and both my life and the lives of millions of little children in South Africa forever. the reason he was making such a big statement about it was because he was raising money while doing it for a couple of things, for charities, Signature of Hope Trust, the Lunchbox Fund, and Operation Smile. At the trip's completion, he had raised more than $490,000. So he was doing it for a pretty good cause, and that's why. Because when I first read the sentence that this was going to change the world, I thought, well, it's pretty neat, but I don't know why it would change the world. And then they add the point that he was raising money for charity. And I thought, okay, well, that will do a good thing.
That's a bit more understandable. Yeah. At first, it just sounds like he's really bragging.
Yeah.
It kind of rubbing it into the people who have to sit at a desk all day. Like, I had 3 months to do this, but I changed the world.
I changed the world, folks. Nah, that would be something if you could cross the Atlantic in a desk. Now, that would be something.
A motor-powered desk.
Yeah.
That's how we need to do it.
So I'm sure for some people this sounds like something they would love to do, but for most it probably seems like maybe a little too much. I would not want to do that.
It sounds scary. The exercise part would be pretty fun, but if he was, I guess he's paddling himself, mm-hmm. so yeah. That would be fun, but there's just too many factors out there that would be almost just unnecessary risks.
I don't think you could do it without all the technology, because like it said, he had a weather forecasting equipment. If you didn't have that, it'd be hard to know. Mm-hmm. And if you got caught in a big storm out there in a paddleboard, I don't think you survive it. You know, you have those huge waves. It just doesn't seem like that would work out. But so technology helped him do it, that's a pretty neat accomplishment. So the way he celebrated when he got back is the way that many people celebrate. He ate a giant burger.
Yes. that would make sense after all that.
Yeah, who knows what he was eating out there. Obviously, somebody was bringing food and probably giving it to him, but unless he was fishing, I don't know. Doesn't seem like it. It seems like his main concern was just paddling, mm-hmm. and they were taking care of the rest of his needs. It makes you think about those shipwreck movies when people are hanging on to a boat or something, a little boat or a dinghy, and they're out there in the ocean. You ever see that movie, what was it? Boy, the name escapes me. The guy... It was a shipwreck, and they were in this boat with a lion, or as tiger, I think it was. It was a tiger. It was just recently, a couple years ago, won a bunch of awards, and the name escapes me, but that's probably not going to help you.
Well, I would be afraid to be in a boat with a tiger too, because as soon as that thing gets hungry, it doesn't matter if you're best friends with it. It seems like they could get, a little bit. They could start thinking about maybe having you for a meal.
Life of Pi, that's what it was.
Life of Pi, okay.
Yeah, P.I., that's the guy's name. It is a tremendous movie.
Tremendous. Really?
Yeah, wow. I really, really liked it. It won a bunch of animation awards, and at first that seems a little odd, but then because the animal's a lot more animated, like the tiger was animated, and they did such a good job with it. And I don't want to give it away, but it's an interesting movie the whole way through. And then at the end, there's a couple of things presented to you that like totally flip the reality of what you've seen. Like, do you believe what you saw, or do you, were you seeing something that wasn't actually happening, but you're seeing it through the character's perspective?
Wow.
Really, really fascinating movie.
I'll try and watch that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as I say that, I'm thinking back, like, I hope there was nothing bad in that. I mean, movies are movies. They kind of always have a few things. But from what I recall, it was... pretty above board in general, but man, it was a really interesting movie. So I think of somebody out of the ocean. I think of them being in a shipwreck or a situation like that, trying to survive. So this guy did it, but he had some help on the paddleboard, and there was no tigers out there, I believe. Tiger sharks, maybe. Grant, you were talking yesterday about how you were on this embarking on this new diet for a while to feel better. You still feel better today, or are you crashing?
Feel great.
Okay,
yeah,
well, good.
Feel great.
Yeah, you look good.
Thanks.
And along with that, a lot of times people are trying to also, if they're dieting, they're trying to build up some muscle too. And no one ever says, I want to lose some of this muscle. And this is a list of some of the best foods to help you build muscle if you are in that endeavor of trying to improve that. And of course, I'm sure there's always a little bit of debate about this, but here's a list from Fox Health. One of the things that will help you build muscle is chicken breast. Protein in it. High quality proteins are essential to build muscle, but it's important not to overdo it. You can't have too many protein meals, I guess, so you should keep it a little bit on the lighter side, and so chicken is good for that. Depends what type of chicken you get, though, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been pretty limited in this 10-day diet. It's been a ton of lean meats, and then just like non-bread based pastas, I guess, things like that, and obviously a ton of vegetables.
Have you been eating chicken?
Yes, yeah. I've had that several times at least.
It's good. It's a pretty good lean meat. Yeah. Number two, they say bran muffins, complex carbs, whole grains release energy gradually into the body, helping sustain you during workouts and keep you satisfied longer. Try opting for a bran muffin, some cereal with nuts and granola, or fish tacos, they say, with rice and beans. So, but again, it depends where you're getting it from. It's chicken isn't always chicken. Fish isn't always fish. Right. Bran isn't always bran. That's always the dilemma in those things because it's not always what you think it is. They say also a glass of milk. True, but what kind of milk? You know, some milk's not the best for you. To help you get in those extra calories, they say try having a glass of regular or chocolate milk. I don't know about that one. Before bed, they say you don't want to eat a whole heavy meal before you go to bed, but milk is a great choice because it has both carbs and protein. That's the age-old tale, right? You can't sleep, you have a warm glass of milk.
Mm-hmm. I've never really done that, but it sounds pretty nice, actually.
It's I don't think I've ever tried it, mainly because that doesn't warm milk doesn't sound good to me, unless it's in some sort of a
that's
warm
like a
beverage.
A cat dish, right?
Yeah,
and that's what you feed to a cat.
Yeah, I suppose so. I should try that because my cat's always up at night, meowing for attention. Here, drink this milk. So that's something you can do if you're trying to build up a little bit of a muscle. And then finally, they say string cheese and a banana, or healthy snacks. So another way to get that carb and protein combination, they say, is snacks like string cheese and a banana or a handful of nuts and a piece of fruit. Having a snack about 1.5 to 2 hours before you work out to give you energy without slowing you down. So you have to – that's always the thing. They, when people are trying to lose weight or trying to improve their health, a lot of times the first thought is eat less and then exercise more. But there is a point of diminishing returns there. Mm-hmm. You have to have fuel if you're going to do something. So you have to eat the right stuff. Fuel yourself the right way.
Right. And also eating less would mean kind of slowing down the metabolism too, or especially if you have long periods of time between meals, then that's actually a way to sort of make you hold on to weight a little bit more because your body's kind of going into starvation mode after a while and trying to store up. What you want to do is have small portions throughout the day as well.
Yeah. Health advice from Grant Turgeon.
Not the most reputable source, I would say.
Well, it's a process for everybody, right? You have your ups and downs, but it is interesting because when you start to look into different things more, and typically because you're trying to get in better shape or whatever, that's been the case for me. It's interesting. You learn a lot, and it's interesting to learn a lot about nutrition. It's actually kind of exciting. I've had this fantasy about being a nutritionist.
Mm-hmm.
We have a nutritionist that comes on the Trumpet Hour program.
Yeah. He's amazing with his insight. It's incredible the things you can learn about the human body and how you can actually control a lot more than you think.
Yeah.
You know, any sort of symptom that you might be having, you can fix it by eating a certain thing or sleeping in a certain amount or whatever it might be. You can figure it out and change it. So it's nice to have a certain aspect of life that you do have control over. I believe we mentioned that yesterday.
Yeah, because it's if you were to believe just the commercials you see on TV or the general thinking, in a lot of cases, you do feel powerless. Like, well, I can't change this. I can't change the way I am. And therefore, the only thing I can do is take this pill or do this thing. And in a lot of cases, you don't have to. Now, there are different circumstances, of course. But then there's the other side of it where instead of kind of admitting, like, I can change this and I need to, people sometimes will go to the other extreme and say, this is fine, everybody's fine, we don't have to fit to these, you know, these normal constructs and so forth. But at the end of the day, if you're not feeling well and if you're, you know, having these issues, whatever they might be, it's not good. I mean, there's no way to, like, to make it seem better than it is. There's a certain reality that we're supposed to function a certain way, and if we get out of whack with that, we have problems. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, apparently there was some panel at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas over the weekend, and that's kind of what they were doing. They were saying that it doesn't matter what your weight is. You can be as big as you want to be, and it doesn't have any health effects, and no one should ever tell you that they're concerned because that's concern trolling. I mean, there are definite aspects of health that don't change, and it doesn't matter if people get personally offended by them. It is true that we need to be trying to be as healthy as we can be, and you know, basically all the time, not just trying to make people feel better by saying that however they might be is the ideal state.
Right. And it is true that there are different sizes in terms of, like, you know, some people are stronger, bigger, some are leaner, some are, and that's all normal and that's fine. But obviously once you start getting to a certain range, I think everyone, if they're honest, could say that's not the normal state. I think we can all agree with that.
Well, they would have called that hate speech, right? So they wouldn't have agreed, but most people probably would.
Yeah. Which is so crazy, because if you think about that idea of, like, you know, hate versus love or whatever, well, what would be more loving, to, like, help somebody fix a problem to where they had just better situations in their life altogether, or to just say, no, don't worry about it, and then they continue on in problems? You know, we all of us like to hear that everything's great, we're great, nothing's wrong, but if it doesn't improve things, whether it's health or whatever, there's no love in that. Mm-hmm. But it's been so flipped around the way people talk about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you used to be able to sprint up and down the steps no problem, and now you're having a hard time going up the steps one time without having to stop for 30 seconds for air, that does not mean you're big and beautiful. That actually means that your health is deteriorating, and that's, people do need to acknowledge that. I don't think people should go out of their way to be insulting about anything,
right.
But definitely when you're trying to tell health experts to stop concerned trolling them, that is going a bit too far.
That's a good example, because that's actually my example, because I used to sprint up and down the stairs to the studio here. Now I don't sprint as much as I used to. But I've been in the same building for quite a while, so that was a purposeful shot at me.
Well, sorry. That's one of my favorite workouts, is running up and down stairs,
yeah.
Especially staying in a hotel and they have like 15 floors. You run up and down that for like 20 minutes and you really feel it.
Absolutely. And then everybody else is like, who's that guy running up and down the stairs?
My dad always did that, and I thought it was really strange, but then I got a little bit older and tried it myself, and I realized it actually has a pretty big benefit in a short amount of time.
It's an incredible workout.
Yeah.
We were in, where was it? Ogden, Utah, I think a few years ago, and we took a hike on a hill. I don't know if you call it a mountain, but it was definitely a hill. And we thought, oh, this would be fun or whatever. But it was a pretty good incline. I tell you, you know, when you're not used to that and the elevation and stuff, like I thought like I was going to explode.
Mm.
I couldn't catch my breath. And we were just walking. And then you have people that live there and do it all the time, and they run by you. And they're looking at you, and they're not even breathing heavy. They're just sauntering by up, like almost straight up a mountain. You know, and I'm like, wow, that would be an awesome exercise if you were doing that every day to the point where where it didn't affect you too much. And that was the same out in California, out in the Indian Wells area. It's very hot there, obviously, but a little cooler up in the mountains. And there's hills right there, and you see people every day at the same time running up the trails on the mountains. So great exercise if you can do it, or stairs or whatever.
That's a fantastic lesson in repetition, too. You know, if you're doing it for the first time and you realize how exhausting it is, and then you see people doing it all the time like it's no problem, it just shows that if you do something every day with your health, then it does improve you quite drastically. And then those people must be feeling great to be able to run up and down hills all the time like that with hardly a problem.
Yeah. I know for a lot of the sports programs, they'll incorporate running hills into their training. And I've seen some videos on the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team, because I like to follow them. And they start out their season running, they call it like the hill. Probably everybody's got that. And what they do is they've got the flag of every team they're going to play up the hill. And so they have to run up and then come down and grab the flag. And they have to keep running until they pull all the flags out of everybody they're going
to
play.
Do they have to get them in order?
Yeah.
Are they put out of order?
I'm not sure on that. I think, I'm not sure. But
wouldn't that be amazing if you had to memorize like all 30 plus games in order and then pick the flags out at the right time?
Yeah. I don't know exactly how they had to do it. All I know is that they had to run up and down that hill a lot. And that's like day one, like,
yeah,
welcome back.
Yeah, it's so important, especially in those sports, to be able to run all day, basically, because they even talk about, like, an NBA player, when he hurts himself and is out for a few weeks, they're saying, well, he's back tonight, but he probably won't be at game speed. He's been out for a few weeks, and he's already a peak-level athlete, and he's not going to be at game speed just for not doing it for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing how all these other guys are improving around you, and you just have to keep on working, or else you'll slow down compared to them.
One of the best athletes, they always say, in the NBA in modern times, even though he was pretty out there personality-wise, Dennis Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
He never got tired. He just that's probably an overstatement, but he just ran and ran and ran and ran, and then when they would, you know, he'd sub out, he'd be on the riding a stationary bike. Like he'd be over there in the tunnel just cuz. And they said, you know, he wasn't living the healthiest lifestyle, but they said he would be out all night and then he'd go, you know, show up for the game, but he'd lift weights before the game and then play the game and then afterwards he'd do something, and people just couldn't figure out how he could keep doing these things. Mm-hmm. So we had a story a while ago, I think we brought it up on the show or I heard it somewhere else, but about this person that didn't get tired when they ran. And they ran for like 3 days straight, I think.
Wow.
Like they would sleep run kind of like because they were tired, but their muscles never fatigued. They had this weird, you know, our muscles are designed to fatigue at a certain point with like lactic acid and stuff. But this person just didn't have that. And so they just didn't get tired. Now, I don't know. Maybe that's a dangerous thing because maybe you don't know when you're pushing it too far. But I don't know. You know, you look at a guy like, say, Rodman. Maybe he had some version of something like that to where he just didn't get tired.
Well, especially when you do consider the partying lifestyle that he had and the fact that he was still able to maintain a high level. Obviously, he playing basketball, that involves a lot of running, and he's always lifting weights and always doing workouts on his own before and after the game. Even with all these other bad habits, he was still in phenomenal shape. So just goes to show you what repetition would do.
Those are always the bad examples because everybody knows somebody like that where it's like, well, that guy, he didn't, you know, he lived a crazy life. He looked at how he ended up, but that's pretty rare.
It's not
going to catch up to you.
It's definitely not an encouragement to dive into that lifestyle.
No,
because we're not all like that, I don't think.
No, he was kind of just a freakish sort of athlete. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here. Neither of us has ever been referred to as a freakish athlete that I'm aware of. The Kia David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. So make sure that you also listen for that. And if you can't catch it live, that's at 7 a.m. every Monday through Friday. You can always get the archives online at kpcg.fm or at thetrumpet.com. Also, some headlines from thetrumpet.com today. You might want to check these out. The top one is by Richard Palmer. Scotland to hold another independence referendum. The survival of the United Kingdom is once again at risk. So that's been in and out of the news. That's a good write-up there at thetrumpet.com. Related to that, without Scotland, there is no Great Britain, written by Brad McDonald from a few years ago. And will Brexit solve all of Britain's problems? That's by Kieran Underwood. All related articles, check that out at thetrumpet.com, the new and revised trumpet.com. Grant, you've got an article for us here today from the New York Times. Pretty interesting. Are teenagers replacing drugs with smartphones? And is that, well, it's good to not have drugs, but what are the effects of the smartphones too?
Yeah, that's the real question here. They're trying to figure out if there's a correlation between teenagers not using as much marijuana in the last 10 years. So they were doing it between 2005 and 2015 when they actually had enough time to gather the data. And they said, you know, the amount of marijuana usage went down a lot among 12 to 17 year olds, not necessarily among college age students. So they're trying to figure out why that might be. 12 to 17 in that time, usually, especially in the last 10 years when smartphones became more popular, that's when kids would get the smartphone. They would be at the age to get some device like that. And so maybe there is some sort of correlation. Maybe by the time they're in college, they've had it for a while and it gets a little bit old. And of course, at college, they have all those parties right there on campus that they could go to that would take up some of their time, where otherwise maybe college students would have been on their phone just as much as well.
Well, it is interesting because we have a certain attention span. And a lot of times, I suppose years ago, before there was smartphones and the internet, you would have more time on your hands in a way. You know, in young people in particular were probably looking to entertain themselves in some way, and sometimes that would be in a way that wasn't good. And so you could see where if people were just kind of hanging about, they could potentially get into some trouble. But now, I mean, even this kind of even ties into the fact that people are more isolated than they used to be. You know, they might be together online, but they're not with another group. And so a lot of times, especially with young people, trouble comes with the group. Like, not everybody would do it on their own, but with a group, it starts going a certain direction. So maybe they're more isolated. I think the reports show that they are. And just their attention is more taken up with some of these other devices. I mean, do they know this is the case, or they're just kind of thinking that it might be, speculating somewhat that teenagers are replacing drugs with smartphones?
A lot of researchers have seen basically a drastic increase in smartphone usage, and so they're going to try and run some studies to see if maybe that hypothesis could be true, that maybe they are replacing drugs with smartphones. They're not really sure of it yet, but definitely multiple researchers cited in this article said it would at least be worth looking into, because clearly one habit is decreasing while the other one is drastically increasing. It's also interesting, too, because at the same time, cigarette usage has gone down a lot among young people. And I could think of a reason like that off the top of my head. I always see, if I'm flipping through the channels, MTV has tons of commercials about getting rid of, you know, no tobacco. They made that kind of like one of their pet causes on that channel. And so, you know, if young people are watching that, maybe they're influenced by that. And cigarettes could then, for those people, not necessarily be like a potential gateway drug to marijuana. So if they're not doing cigarettes, it's a little bit less likely that they would venture a little bit further into other drugs.
Well, it's also interesting because marijuana usage is becoming more and more legalized in certain places.
Yeah, it's more popularly accepted. And so you would think that among all groups, and really among all groups except for the teens, the usage has gone way up. That's the interesting part.
Yeah, there are different studies that come out from time to time, and in some ways, it seems like it's good news. You know, they'll talk about like teen pregnancy rates coming down and things like that. And you look at it and you think, okay, well, that's pretty good news. And maybe it is. But then sometimes when you dig into the data, risky behavior is not changed. It's just they're smarter about it. Occasionally, that's the case. Or maybe more than occasionally. So, yeah, you hate to be too quick to say, oh, this has got to be a negative thing. You know, maybe it is somewhat positive. Maybe people are making some better decisions. But a lot of times it seems like the behaviors don't change. Or if they do, they just get shifted to something else that may not be great either. Obviously, a smartphone's not a problem in and of itself. But then depending on what you're doing with it or what, you know, what your involvement is with it, it could be a problem as well. So it's kind of like a teeter-totter, mm-hmm. You know. Obviously, it's good if they're not getting involved in drugs and such, but then what are the results of getting into a smartphone?
Right.
You know, excessively. Those are the questions.
Yeah, and it's close to 80% of teenagers have a smartphone now. And, you know, it's interesting because all these other wrong activities are decreasing. Cigarette use, marijuana use, even the usage of or the involvement in premarital sex is going down. Like you said, teenage pregnancies would also go down because of that. But then when you think about it, well, you can access pretty much anything on a smartphone. That's just the sad reality of it. And so these kids who maybe have not developed the discipline that they need in life yet are already having access to anything in the world, no matter how good or how evil it might be. It's right there in their pocket, and in a lot of cases, it's more addictive. There was even a girl in this article who had occasionally tried marijuana, and yet she sleeps with her phone. So marijuana, she can take it or leave it. The phone, she has to have that at all times. It's like it's more addictive to have that phone, to have access to all that information, than it is to have access to an illegal drug and a temporary high from that.
Yeah, it is. It is. They're having studies about how people have to do digital detox.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it gets to the point where people have to, if it's a big enough thing, they actually have to go to like a rehab. And it's a really, really difficult process. And I think from what I recall, some of the reports have shown that, you know, the way your brain responds to some technologies, it is sort of like a drug in a way. Because it becomes addictive, and they can't be without it, mm-hmm. Or they think they can't be without it, and so it is interesting to see technology change, behavior change, but which direction is it going? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Is it just parallel, but a different thing? It's just a lot of things we don't know yet, probably. because it hasn't been around long enough, say, with smartphones. What happens to the teenager that is just has a smartphone continually? What kind of an adult does that become? You know, we're not far enough along to know that.
Right. It is hard to fully gauge the impact right now. I feel like there's just a lot of pros and cons in this. Obviously, being addicted to a smartphone means at least a little bit less potentially dangerous behavior, a little bit less alcohol usage, which would lead to less drunk driving, less drug usage, which would lead to a lot less other, you know, dumb activity. And then obviously a decrease in the pregnancies and things like that. But at the same time, it seems like kids just don't have a willingness to go out and have an adventure, even in a good way. Obviously, those things are extremely risky and dangerous to get into. But now it's like kids are just focused on experiencing something virtually instead of experiencing it in real life.
Or even when you do go to something, I think we've mentioned this before, you go to a basketball game, like an NBA game. That's a pretty a big event. There's things happening constantly to engage your senses. For me personally, it's too much. I'd rather just right. watch the game and not be hit with everything else.
Exactly.
But some people like that, so fair enough. They have that going on, and you still see a majority of people on their phones,
mm-hmm.
not even really watching the game. And I just always think, well, why are you here? I mean,
yeah.
There's this whole world happening in front of you, and yet you're still within your little, you know, you're updating your phone. I mean, I don't know what they're doing, checking their Facebook feed, I guess, or keeping up with their social media stuff, whatever it could be. And I mean, I pull my phone out occasionally, maybe just see if I got an email or a text or something. Mm-hmm. I think we probably all do that. But some people just seem like they're buried in it constantly. And you just wonder, why did you come to the game at all?
Yeah, it's like it's a symbol of being cool to have both hands on the phone and be looking down at that thing at all times, even when something really interesting is going on, because then it's like, well, oh, that person must be doing something even more interesting than the professional game going on right in front of them. I wonder what they're doing.
There was a couple of years ago, I was at my son's Little League baseball game, and the umpires, a lot of times, are the teenagers that play baseball, and that's kind of what they do for a job. And there was one time I remember one of the officials on the field. He wasn't the guy behind home plate, but he was out, I think, between like, you know, second and first somewhere out there. And he was on his phone like during the game. And I thought, was he even paying attention?
Wow.
Now the kids were pretty young, and it's not like, you know, it's that hard hitting of action, but still, he was just out there tooling around on his phone. I thought, well, I didn't think it was great. I didn't make a deal out of it, but I thought, you know, that could offend people. I mean, he's supposed to be working. He's supposed to at least be paying attention to the kids.
Right.
And he's out there, you know, tooling around. I don't know what he was doing, but he was on his phone.
Exactly. And when you hear descriptions of what the phone does or how people replace certain things with their phone, certain doctors are calling it an alternative reinforcer to drugs and saying that teens can get literally high when playing these games. So if you think about that, you have the phone in your pocket at all times. You don't have to go out to a street corner and purchase drugs from anybody. It's right there. So that would lead to just using a phone way more than you would ever do illegal drugs. And you could have the same kind of feeling from it, or even worse, just from the phone. So that's just kind of the danger of being out of balance there.
It's interesting times, changing technologies and changing habits, too. That's a write-up from the New York Times. Are teenagers replacing drugs with smartphones? That's all the time we have for today on Trumper Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us. Hope you have a great rest of your Wednesday. Check out the Kia David Trumpet Daily Radio Show and the Trumpet Hour program today. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.